Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour, Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is May 31, 2014, or it is Sivian 3, 2018. We will start our third service on this Sabbath day with a song entitled, Yah Will Take Care of You. Be not dismayed, for happy time, Yah will take care of you. Beneath his wings of love abide, Yah will take care of you. Yah will take care of you. Through every day, or all the way, He will take care of you. Yah will take care of you. His 3 days of tough and heart does fail, Yah will take care of you. When dangers fear your path assail, Yah will take care of you. Yah will take care of you through every day or all the way. He will take care of you. Yah will take care of you. All you may need, He will provide. Yah will take care of you. Nothing you ask will be denied. Yah will take care of you. Yah will take care of you through every day or all the way. He will take care of you. Yah will take care of you. No matter what may be the test, Yah will take care of you. Lean weary one upon His breast, Yah will take care of you. Yah will take care of you. Through every day, or all the way, He will take care of you. Yahshua will take care of you. Part 16, Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, page 209. We're still on the subject of the 144,000. We're in the summary of the 144,000. The deadly wound is healed. That's the subtitle. We're dealing with Revelation 13, 1-3. We're going to do just a little review from our last study. It says that the event of the above stated date fulfilled the prophecy. Then we would make no mistake if we should suppose that the last part of the verse as well met its fulfillment. Let's read the first part then. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast, Revelation 13:3. It is generally understood among the Seventh-day Adventists that since the Italian government granted civil power unto the Pope on the 11th day of the February 1929, to be the event of the prophetic fulfillment, we shall grant that the interpretation is correct, and the deadly wound has been healed. Note the verb, was, and healed are both in the past tense. This being so, it is evident that this particular prophecy is to be fully understood after its fulfillment as to when and how accomplished Well, okay. Has that been understood then by anybody before us? No. And it is still yet to be understood. Okay. It says, if the event of the above stated date fulfilled the prophecy, then we would make no mistake if we should suppose that the last part of the verse has as well met its fulfillment, and all the world wondered after the beast. Quoting from the volume 6, page 14, the prophecy of the Revelation is being fulfilled that all the world wondered after the beast. Revelation 13:3. The world being now at this present time in the no better spiritual condition but worse, we may conclude that the scripture has fully met its fulfillment. The wound has been healed as well as the world has wondered after the beast. Well, you see, this is to meet its fulfillment here in this 12th hour, and V.T. Hollis says it's already met its fulfillment in the 10th hour. And he wrote this in 1930. He said, that's done made its fulfillment. Well, then why are we looking at this here beast today, being very active and coming into his own? And why is it then we're looking at the whole world today that's wondering after this beast? Okay, so you see, this is what I'm talking about. Just because the message is introduced to a prophet, he thinks that that's the time for the fulfillment of it. Let's go on. For we need not assume that the world would have to enroll in the membership of that body of the people in order to fulfill the prophecy. Note, the world wondered not after the wounded head, but after the beast. And the scripture deals in the sense of the spiritual matters. Again, quoting from the volume 6, page 15. This demon worship was revealed to him, John, and it seemed to him as if the whole world were standing on the brink of the perdition. The world has partaken of the spirit of the beast, thus fulfilling the divine prediction. Now, V.T. Hollis makes a comment, says, notice that the world didn't wonder after that head that was wounded, it wondered after that beast. And I keep in mind that that head was wounded on that fifth beast, that was the second part of that fourth beast, pagan Rome. That fifth beast being ecclesiastical Rome that had his reign from 538 to 1798 A.D. And that's when that head had its wound. And then that head showed up on this leopard-like beast after the that fifth beast, the time was up, representing the ecclesiastical Rome. So, what is the beast? What are they wondering after then? They're wondering after this beast that come up out of the sea, that he is the amalgamation and the conglomeration of the first four beasts that Daniel saw in the vision. And so now this leopard-like beast, which is controlled by Rome, is a composite of those four kingdoms, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome. More notably, Rome, the fourth beast, pagan Rome. Okay, this is just the second phase of that fourth beast, this leopard-like beast, which is makes him the number six beast. And so this is what the world has wondered after, is this leopard-like beast. Okay. Well, that's when the world starts wondering after the beast. It's when they start wondering after this leopard-like beast. In Revelation 13, 1 to 3. And then it says, when that scarlet-colored beast comes on the scene in Revelation 17 and succeeds that leopard-like beast, the scarlet beast is at number 7, and he's in the 12th hour. The leopard-like beast is... Actually, he's the fifth beast. He's the fifth beast. Okay. Of that, the pagan Rome, the fourth beast, the nondescript beast that Daniel saw in vision. So the leopard-like beast is actually the fifth beast in that order. And the little two-horned beast represents the United States government. The lamb-like beast in Revelation 13 is your sixth beast. And your scarlet colored beast in Revelation 17 is your seventh beast. And so, actually, that's the beast that the whole world wonders after. Is that scarlet colored beast. The two horned beast represents the United States. The whole world didn't wonder after the United States when that two horned beast is in power. The whole world didn't wonder after the beast when that leopard light beast came out of the sea in 1798. Okay. The only time that the whole world wonders after the beast is in Revelation 17, that scarlet colored beast in number 7. Because he's in charge of the whole world. The leopard light beast wasn't in charge of the whole world when he came in 1798. The little two horned beast in the United States was not in charge except only the United States. But now she's made an image of the beast, a scarlet colored beast, which is in charge of the world now. You get the point? Let's continue on. In other words, you get the picture. And I stared upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his head the name of blasphemy, Revelation 13:1. Note, this beast has 7 heads and 10 horns. In order to get a full understanding of the prophecy, we must begin from the root up. For the first time, these 10 kings' horns are brought to our attention by the scriptures found in Daniel 2:41-42, represented by the 10 toes on the great image in Nebuchadnezzar's dream. After revealing unto the king the end of his Roman Empire, represented by the head of the goat, and down through the stream of time to the second coming of the Asherah, Daniel said, "And in the days of these kings shall the Elohim of the heavens set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed." Daniel 2:44. In Daniel 7, this same prophecy of the world's history is repeated in the symbols of the beast. For the kings, represented by the toes of the great image, are this time represented by the 10 horns of the fourth and nondescript beast in verse 7. For the reason for the duplicate is to bring the truth of the little horn, papal power, verse 8. For the 10 horns kings are repeated again in Revelation 13:1. To point out the time of the prophecy as explained by the Daniel, in the days of these kings shall the Elohim of the heavens set up a kingdom. Note that the leopard light beast, Revelation 13:1-3, arise out of the sea in the like manner as the four beasts of Daniel 7. Therefore, the process that brings about this beast on the stage of the action is the same as those representing Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome. If the 10 horns of this beast represent the kings now in the existence, as to which the beast himself represents the period following Rome, as the breaking down of the Roman Empire brought about the existence of these kings, is also being termed Rome in her broken state, symbolized by the great image of the Daniel 2:42. For the feet and the toes of which are composed of iron and clay, as I told you before, the iron represents Rome, the clay represents the house of Israel. I'll give you Jeremiah 18:6 for that reference. Iron is the metal which represents Rome. The clay is the part that represents Israel, the broken part. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his head the name of blasphemy, Revelation 13:1. Okay, so it says, for the symbols given by the inspiration are perfectly capable of the revealing of the truth beyond a shadow of a doubt. For any interpretation of the prophecy that does not come up unto the exact specification by the symbols is not the kind that can be depended upon, and sooner or later would be exploded. It has been admitted that the 10 horns represent the 10 kingdoms into which Rome was divided. For this interpretation is true, for you will note these 10 horns are horns with the crowns. For the crowns denote that these kings have received their kingdom, but note carefully that the heads are without crowns. Therefore, these seven heads cannot represent kingdoms or a civil government. Thus, it would be unwise and deceptive to even think that the heads could represent civil powers in the past or future. Now, isn't this amazing that those seven stars in the right hand of Yahshua, that's walking in the midst of seven candlesticks there in Revelation chapter 1, he said the seven stars are the seven angels of the seven churches, and the seven churches are the seven candlesticks of the sanctuary of Israel. And notice that all seven of those churches had their beginning, and they all seven had their ending. And they represent the house of Israel. We had them in the type back then as literal cities with those names, and they had temples in them. And they were believers in Judaism, all seven of those churches. They were located all over Asia Minor. They were located in and around the Mediterranean Sea. And then they showed up in Revelation 2 and 3 as representing the reformers, starting with Paul in the first century, ending with the Seventh-day Adventist Church in 1844, Laodicea, those seven churches. Adventist Church had its run for 158, 59, 60 years, from 1844 to 2003, and then she came to her end. So, showing that the seventh candlestick, Laodicea, also had a beginning and an ending. Laodicea had its beginning in 1844, and Laodicea had its ending in 2002 with Gilead Center at Kermit, Texas, at the Atonement. Now, I'm suggesting before that these seven heads also represents the seven mountains of Israel. And they also are the same of these seven heads on this leopard-like beast. Because the seven heads on this leopard-like beast had its origin with the dragon, the red dragon that stood before the woman to devour the man-child there in Revelation chapters 12. Remember that the old red dragon represented Satan? He had seven heads upon his head, and they had crowns on them. No, they didn't have crowns. He had taken possession of all seven churches, and what was the name of those seven churches? I just showed them to you, Revelation 2 and 3. It starts with Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea, in that order. Well, these are seven heads on this beast that was on Satan's head, the old red dragon. Those seven churches of Asia, of Israel, that had a candlestick, that had a sanctuary service that they worshipped at. And that sanctuary service was given to them from heaven. So these seven heads on this leopard-like beast, that the leopard-like beast had taken complete control of, and then it shows that Mr. Dunrug, or that Revelation 17 woman, she takes control of those seven heads, which represents the seven churches of Israel, and I just give you the names of them. They're found in Revelation 2 and 3. And one of those seven heads had a wound on it. Why is that? Because the Catholic Church had taken over the first church, represented by the first head, and that was Ephesus. That was the apostolic congregation, represented the apostolic congregation of the Nazarene Creed that the disciples started. So, the Catholic Church said that we've had the keys of Peter passed on to us, so we've taken over his church. And that was the Apostolic Church. And that's the head that was wounded to death in 1500 by Martin Luther. That's the head. But it was called Catholicism. Well, they had captured the Church of Ephesus and Paul. Okay. Pagan Rome did. Pagan Rome captured it. And then pagan Rome evolved into ecclesiastical Rome in 476 A.D. But she kept control of that head that she stole from Peter, the Church of or Paul, the Church of Ephesus. So that wound on that seventh head, or on that one of the seven heads, was on the first church, Ephesus. The seventh head, Laodicea, didn't have no wound on it. I taught before that the seventh head was the same as that head on that beast that had the wound. Okay? Let us go ahead now with our study. We're on page 212 now. All seven heads are alike without distinction one from another. If the head that was wounded represents a religious system, then we must conclude that the six represent religious bodies. The number of them being the biblical number seven, it means all are complete. So what is those seven bodies? They start out with Yahshua with the seven stars in his right hand. Now, how did Yahshua end up with those seven stars representing those seven churches when the red dragon was in charge of them when Yahshua came here? By virtue of his crucifixion and resurrection, he was able to retrieve those seven stars from the old dragon, the red dragon, Lucifer, those seven churches, Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamum, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea. He was able to secure those seven churches of Israel from Lucifer. But guess what happened? Yahshua put the seven churches in charge of the apostles, and then he went back to heaven. But when the apostles fell away in the first century, pagan Rome come and recaptured those seven churches. When they captured the apostolic movement, then they captured all seven of those churches again. Yahshua only had them briefly with the apostles. They only had it briefly until they fell away, and pagan Rome took them over. So that's how pagan Rome got the keys of Peter, through those seven churches. Okay? Had the heads come one after another, like the beast of Daniel 7 and the little horn, after which the three were plucked up, it would denote a successive form of the system. Since all seven were in the existence at the same time, the symbol reveals that all seven systems must rule during the same period. And where were they ruling at? They were ruling in Jerusalem. But they were taken over by the dragon, so who was in charge of them? The Pharisees. Well, what about the apostles? What church did they represent? They represented one of those churches. Matter of fact, the apostles represented all of those churches, all those seven churches. So when Yahshua delivered the apostles then, from the Pharisees and set them up with their own kingdom here on earth with the apostles at the head of it, and the apostles took charge of those seven churches because many converts came from those seven churches to Jerusalem and was converted to the apostolic Nazarene creed of the disciples, which was the tribe of Judah in charge. Okay, so all seven churches were in operation all at one time, but that's the first and the last time that they were in charge all at the same time, because Revelation 2 and 3 show where they come on the scene again after that, but they come on the scene one at a time, and that starts with Paul and Ephesus. And then it goes on 1,500 years later, and it appears with Martin Luther, the second church, Smyrna, in 1,500 A.D. Then it goes on to 1,543, and the third church, Pergamum, shows up with John Knox, the Presbyterian. And then in 1,725, The fourth church shows up at Thyatira, John Wesley, he's a Methodist, 1725. The fifth church shows up as Sardis, Alexander Campbell, the Baptist Church, in 1810. The sixth church shows up with William Miller in 1833. The seventh church shows up with Laodicea and the Adventist in 1844. So, in this case, the last time that they ruled separately, starting with Paul, one at a time. But back in Yahshua's day, they all seven ruled at the same time. Let us continue. For these seven heads cannot represent anything at any time before the fall of the Roman monarchy. For that which represents what took place before the fall of Rome is symbolized in the composition of the beast, excluding the seven heads and ten horns, as set forth in the second verse. For the leopard part represents Grecia, Daniel 7:6, the feet of a bear, Medo-Persia, Daniel 7:5, and the mouth of a lion represents Daniel, Revelation, Daniel 7:4. No, represents Babylon, I'm sorry, Daniel 7:4. For the combination of the beast in the Revelation 13:1-2, and his makeup is the evidence that he comes on the stage of the action after the four great universal empires, namely Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome. Thus, he becomes the fifth beast, representing the period which followed the fall of Rome, the ten horns. Okay, it says, of both beasts, Daniel 7:7 and Revelation 13:1, as well as the ten toes of Daniel 2:4, as well as the ten toes of Daniel 2:42. Represent the same ten kingdoms into which Rome was divided. These ten kings personate the civilization in the fifth period of the one which followed Rome to our own time and on to the third coming of Yahshua, according to Daniel 2:44. And in the days of these kings shall the Elohim of the heavens set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. Furthermore, note that the ten horns on the nondescript beast of Daniel 7:7 are crownless, but the ones on the leopard-like beast, Revelation 13:1, have crowns. For the symbol reveals that the horns on both beasts represent the same king, crownless on the first beast because those ten kings' horns had no kingdom as yet before the fall of the Rome. For the fact that the leopard beast has the crown horns is that he comes on the stage of the action after the fall of the Rome, at which time these kings received their kingdoms. Now this is where we ended on our last study. Now let's continue on with some new information here. We're on page 213. It says, for the little horn on the base of the Daniel 7:8, which came afterwards among the ten, and in the place of which three fell, has been interpreted to be the papal head from 538 A.D. to 1798, and which was wounded in the 15th century. For the deadly wound brought about the division and multiplied the head as pictured in the Revelation 13:1. For the six heads represents Protestantism, and the one which was wounded, Catholicism. Okay, now remember I told you Catholicism captured the first church, Ephesus. So that was the seventh head. And the one, and that's the reason why Yahweh called out reformers out of the Catholic Church. Was to reform the Catholic Church because she actually she had captured that church called Ephesus. She was in charge of one of the seven churches of Israel. She had stolen the candlestick of Ephesus. That's the reason why Yahweh called people out of her to reform her. Reform her back to Judaism. But as we found out, she wouldn't reform. So the Protestant had to stay outside of her ranks after that. They couldn't get Mama to reform. And so they had to stay outside of her ranks. Okay. So why was it that we had only the six churches that came on the scene to reform that that Catholic Church, because she has stolen the first church, the Ephesus. So the next six churches, starting with Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea, those six then were called on the scene to reform Mama, the Catholic Church, because she had taken possession of all seven of those heads. Okay. For the sixth prophet and the one Catholic head makes the biblical number seven, meaning complete all. Okay, for the ten horns represents this present civilization under the civil power, the heads are symbol of all Christendom. For this prophecy, it pictures the entire civilization which came out through the four universal empires by the fall of the Rome. Really, it cannot include other nations and peoples, for the makeup of the beast is composed only of the Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome, as previously explained. Had the number of the horns been seven, it would have the biblical number all, but since the number ten is used, all other are excluded. However, the nations and peoples who are excluded by the symbol ten, and also by the composition of the beast, are not altogether left out, for the fall of the three horns on the beast of Daniel 7:8 left a balance of the biblical number seven. Thus the fall of the three kings, namely the Herculi, Oscos, and the Vandals, gave the signal for the present close union with the entire world by the modern inventions. Therefore, the influence of the Western civilization, both civil and religious, represented by the symbols, horns, and heads, involved the entire present civilization. Thus, the symbolical prophecy has met its fulfillment. For the prophecy of Revelation 13:3 and the world, wanted after the beast, reveals a great apostasy. Okay, for the biblical number seven includes everything represented by the heads riding on the beast and headed by the devil. So, in other words, she captured all of Protestantism, which is really all of Israel, a spiritual Israel at one time. Note, the name of the blasphemy is upon all the seven heads, symbols of the impious religious leaders mocking the personality or authority of the Elohim, under the cloak of the Christianity, for the intention of the complete satanic scheme is to deceive the whole world. For the statement made by the Yahshua is true, that he, Satan, will try to deceive even the very elect, 144,000, if it were possible. For the spirit of prophecy, speaking on the scripture, says, this demon worship was revealed to him, John, and it seemed to him as if the whole world for standing on the brink of the perdition. But as he looked with the intense interest, he beheld the company of the Elohim's commandment-keeping people, volume 6, page 15. We must not be surprised if we should see that we have not hitherto fully understood the true meaning of the healing process. For we repeat the definition of the verbs being in the past tense, as it were wounded to death. And his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. It is evident that the inspiration foresaw that it would not be clearly understood until the divine prediction is fulfilled. For the spirit of the prophecy bears witness to this by saying, the mark of the beast is exactly what it has been proclaimed to be. Not all in regard to this matter is yet understood, nor will it be understood until the unrolling of the scroll, volume 6, page 17. If the scroll has made a turn, then only may we expect the truth to unmask the scripture. For the exile of Pope Pius VI in 1798 and his death at the Valence, France, August 19, 1799, is not the receiving of the wound, and no more than the death of any other pope before or after. For it only fulfilled Revelation 13:10. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. Also the great prophetic period of the 1260 years of the Daniel 7:25. Neither was the election of another pope, the healing of the wound, It was only a sign of the deadly blow being accomplished. Yet, so with the granting back civil power to the Pope in 1929 is not the thing which healed the wound, but only a sign that it has been healed. Note carefully that the deadly wound was not inflicted by any one of the 10 horns, like the little horn of Daniel 7:8, after which tree fell. If any of the horns had inflicted the wound, it would indicate that it was to be delivered by a civil power. Thus, Berthier could be credited for delivering the blow. But since the horns had nothing to do with the head, it is evident that the infliction came from within the head. Therefore, Luther is the only one who can be credited for delivering the blow. For the exile of the Pope in 1798 was only a sign of the material side of the wound, showing that the blow had been delivered, but the spiritual side of the truth has been altogether overlooked. Had not the head received the deadly wound by the Martin Luther, the Pope could not have been put in the prison by the Berthier or by any other general, for before the sword was delivered, the Pope reigned supreme. But the Luther's blow weakened his power. Thus the continual infliction began to irritate the head. This irritation continued until 1870, when finally the temporal power of the Pope was taken away. That being the last irritation on the head, it shows that it was left to heal its deadly wound. The idea established by Uriah Smith in Daniel and Revelation is correct as far as the material part is concerned. The election of the new Pope, the material, gave a signal that the deadly wound was to be healed. What we are interested in most is the spiritual part of the lesson, which we shall briefly endeavor to bring out at this time. For the reason this prophecy is brought to our attention in this chapter is to reveal the truth of the head which received the deadly wound. Note that the beast has 7 heads. The one was wounded, but the 6 are not. The head which received the wound is being interpreted to be the papal head. Wounded by the Martin Luther, for the stroke being delivered by the true biblical doctrine taught by the Luther, with the result was that the Protestantism came on the stage of the action in the opposition unto the head. This is what made the wound. For the statement being true, then as long as the Protestantism remains loyal unto the Bible principle and the head and the existence, that sore wound would remain open. But if Protestantism should depart from their pledge, the Bible and the Bible only, or refuse new light, the wound would be healed, and the world would wonder at the beast, apostasy. The head that was wounded was not much trouble because a pope had fallen under the sod, nor will it ever be as long as another can fill his place. The only thing that has worried the head and annoyed the beast is true Protestantism. The devil knows it, and the head knows it, but Elohim's people have allowed the old dragon to pull the wool over their eyes. Arise, brother, arise, sister. Let not the shrewd enemy deceive you from a crown of the life at the 11th hour. Now, this crown of life came into prominence at the end of the 11th hour in 2002. And consequently, then, this message is for the 11th hour Adventist at Gilead Center. For they truly were in charge of the 11th parabolic hour. Let us continue. Is the death of the Pope far more important than the birth of Protestantism? Is the exile of the Pope of the greater honor than the seclusion in the Wartburg Castle? Is Berthier a greater hero for pulling the bars against the prison gates than the humble monk who rung them open to throw in the once exalted pontiff? Has not the solidity of the character and stability of the purpose that the faith in the Elohim and the heavenly messenger made all these possible. If Luther is the greatest and his act far more glorious, why should inspiration inscribe a prophecy for the exile and death of the Pope rather than the act of Luther? Why should inspiration, notice the taking away or restoring of the temporal power of the Pope, rather than the reclaim of the Bible and the casting away of the darkness? Has not the Elohim by the hand of the Luther thrown asunder the doors of the darkness and caused light to shine on his written word? Has not the faith and effort of this heavenly messenger ended the terrible persecution and bloodshed of the saints of the Most High? For the only rightful answer unto all these numerous questions is the Luther's blow, delivered the infliction on the head, and only true Protestantism can keep that sore open. Notice it said true Protestantism. But as each church came on the scene, and then he disappeared off the scene, until the last one finally appeared, and then the Laodicean represented the Adventist church, and as soon as probation closed for them, then that's when the deadly wound is healed. The deadly wound is healed when you see him going forward unrestricted and taking over all the governments of the world. That's when the deadly wound is healed. I can tell you that right now. In 1844, when the announcement was made of the fall of the modern Babylon by the preaching of the second angel's message of Revelation 14:8, the wound would have been healed, for the Babylon had fallen and would have brought about the fulfillment of and all the world wanted it to be. But the Seventh-day Adventists came on the stage of the action, thus keeping the thorn in the wound by being proclaimed as the only true Protestant since that time. This being so, then as long as Seventh-day Adventists as a body remain true to the principles and doctrines which built this great government, the wound cannot be healed, neither can it be said all the world wondered after the beast. Okay, I'm going to read this again, folks. This is New Light. In 1844, when the announcement was made of the fall of the modern Babylon by the preaching of the second angel's message of Revelation 14:8, the wound would have been healed, for Babylon had fallen, and it would have brought about the fulfillment of all the world wanted it to be. But the Seventh-day Adventists came on the stage of the action, thus keeping the thorn in the wound by the being proclaimed, and I added the preposition as, that wasn't in there, the only true Protestants since that time. So, of all the seven churches, of all the five churches before Laodicea that were Protestant, labeled as Protestant churches, the Adventists end up being the only two true Protestant churches of them all. Alright, so it says, as the only true Protestant since that time. Well, actually, because the other five churches fell away after Babylon had fallen. They went back into Babylon, those Protestant churches, those Sunday-keeping churches. This being so, then as long as Seventh-day Adventists as a body remain true to the principles and doctrines which built this great movement, and that means long as they may stay true to the Seventh-day Sabbath, that's what made them a distinction from the other Protestant churches, because they held on to Sunday that was changed by the Catholic Church and so forth. So by Adventists holding on to the Sabbath now, it made them unique and it made that distinction between them and the other five Protestant churches that had fallen away and went back into Babylon. So she remains the only true Protestant as the only true Protestant church since that time. This being so, then as long as Seventh-day Adventists as a body remain true to the principles of the doctrines which built this great movement, the wound cannot be healed, neither can it be said all the world wondered after to be. But how did the Adventist church remain true to those doctrines? By raising up new prophets, one to succeed the other. E.T. Hallef had to be raised up to succeed the Adventists because they had completely repudiated their constitution and their doctrines of of the Advent doctrines by 1929, when that wound started its healing. Okay, but that wound wasn't completely healed. But Yahweh raised up another prophet, V.T. Hollis, that kept that wound open. And then when V.T. Hollis died, Ben Roden, he continued on, and he kept that wound open. But just by merely the fact of keeping the Sabbath day and telling the world that the Adventist Church is the true church, just by doing that alone, show that the Adventist Church kept the Protestant the wound open. And then when Verla succeeded Ben Roden in 1970, he kept the wound open. I've seen him stand in his own pulpit there at Kermit and thrust his fist out there in the air and say, "I'm declaring war against the Pope today." Verla Johnson kept up the protesting until 2002-2003. Okay. And so now it says the deadly wound was healed, though, when that last Protestant church, the Adventist church, quit protesting. And so when Verla Johnson was cut off, that means that the Adventist church had come to her end, and that she automatically, by prophecy, quit protesting against the Catholic Church. Because her commission had run out, she no longer had a message, she no longer had a commission to do anything for the gospel work of the three angels' messages, because they all dovetailed into the fourth and fifth angel, the form and the letter ring of truth that was given to the next movement, the House of David, that came out of the Adventist Church there at Gilead Center of Kermit, Texas. Bringing that to a close, the 11th hour Adventist, and starting up with the 12th hour Adventist. Okay, as we have departed from the fundamental strict obedience to Elohim's word, by which only can we keep his commandments as a true Adventist, then we have left the divine foundation and wondered as to be if the wound is healed. Then we as a people have partaken of the spirit of the beast, the world, as the exile of the Pope was a signal of the infliction accomplished just so. The granting of the civil power unto the Pope in 1929 is a signal that true Protestantism has lost its power, but it didn't quit protesting just because it lost its power. Thus the world wondered after the beast, or the world started wondering after the beast. For this wholesale apostasy headed by the self-deceived religious leaders cannot be after the purification of the Elohim Church, for that time is a time of the harvest, and to which time the Gentiles of Isaiah 60 would be converted unto the Church. Speaking of the glorious harvest time, the prophet says, "And the loftiness of man shall be bowed down, and the hardness of men shall be made low. And the Yahweh alone shall be exalted, and the hardness of men shall be made low, and the Yahweh alone shall be exalted in that day," Isaiah 2:17. Elohim's church would be exalted as prophesied by both Isaiah 2 and Micah 4. Read the pages 173-81. Therefore, the harvest time cannot be a time of the apostasy for the church of Elohim. If it was, Elohim would have no church. And the harvest time is in the 12th parabolic hour. But the apostasy took place in the 11th parabolic hour, with the 11th hour Adventist Mount Zion at the 12th hour, at the 11th hour at Gilead Center in 2002-2003. Okay, so it says, for the prophet Isaiah, referring unto this time, of the spiritual darkness, says, "And in that day seven women shall take a hold of one man, saying, We will eat our own bread, and wear our own apparel, only let us be called by thy name to take away our reproach." It is an admitted fact that the women spoken of here represent the churches, and I might add, represents those seven same churches that we just spoke of with the seven candlesticks, those Protestant churches, Adventist being the seventh one, Laodicea. The biblical number seven is used as a symbol, meaning all. Therefore, the symbol does not exclude any, but means all. For the spirit of prophecy bears witness unto this by saying, the number seven indicates completion. Acts of the Apostles, page 585. Naturally, it would include Seventh-day Adventists as well. Otherwise, it would not be all. While these women are refusing the instruction of Yahshua through His Word and His righteousness, symbolized by the bread and apparel, they wish to be called by His name, a Christian. But while the world is on the brink of the perdition, Elohim immediately gets to work and set things in order, as foretold in the second verse. In that day shall the branch of the Yahweh be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth shall be excellent and comely for them that are escaped of the Israel. Isaiah 4:2. Note that the glorious promise is for those that shall escape Israel. 144,000. This has no reference to the people in the world, but unto those in the Elohim church. For the third verse says, He that is left in Zion and he that remaineth in Jerusalem shall be called holy. For the first verse gives us the time very definitely that it is a time of the purification of His church. For it says, When the Yahweh shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of the Zion, and shall have purged the blood of the Jerusalem from the midst thereof by the spirit of the judgment and by the spirit of the burning. It says, While the world has wondered after the beast, Elohim has 144,000 who have not bowed a knee unto the Baal. Though they seem to be lost without a shepherd, the arm of the omnipotence is watching over them. In the statement previously quoted from the volume 6, page 15, speaking of the terrible apostasy everywhere prevalent at this time, in the sense that the world has wandered after the beast, says, But as the John looked with intense interest, he beheld a company of Elohim's commandment-keeping people, 144,000. Now, when it's talking about the world running after the beast, it's talking about these seven churches that have apostatized. And until the Adventists apostatized and completed the wandering after the beast, this is really what it's talking about, wandering after the beast, the whole world. The whole religious world is what wandered after the beast. It's the whole religious world. We haven't seen this before. When Brother Johnson apostatized for the Laodicean Church in 2002, that's when the whole world then wandered after the beast. Not until then. Elohim commandment, so they had upon their foreheads the seal of the living Elohim and the faith of the Yahshua. And I heard a voice from the heavens saying unto me, Write, blessed are the dead which die in the Yahshua from henceforth. Note that after the sealing of the 144,000, there would be some who would die in the Yahshua saved, for the scriptures read, from henceforth, meaning from the time that this company was sealed. Okay, it's a... Well, I don't believe this. I don't really believe this. I don't believe there's anybody going to die here in the 12th hour in the harvest time that are preordained to live eternally. If they come through the judgment, when their name comes up in the judgment and they pass through it, I don't believe that they're going to die after that. I do not believe that. And I believe I can substantiate that from the scriptures. But let's go on. For the 144,000 are living saints to be translated without seeing death. For the Yahweh has set them in. Why would He resurrect the righteous dead to clear back to Adam and then let some of the righteous living die? And then have to resurrect him again. That don't make no sense, folks. That's what we're here for. Straighten these things out. The house of David. For their destination is inscribed. Elohim, New Jerusalem. Testimony of Ministers, page 446. Therefore, those who die in the Yahweh must be of those who are saved after the separation in the time of the harvest. Okay. Under which Isaiah 52:1 and Zephaniah 3:13 are fulfilled. Now, the judgment of the living started with the 11th hour Adventist and Trumpet Texas in 1970 for the house of Esau, even though she was occupying the throne of Judah. Brother Johnson was occupying the throne of David, the throne of Judah, but he was operating as the antitypical Esauite with the 11th hour message of Mount Zion's 11th hour. And there's a lot of believers that came out of the rod period that lived and died during that period of time that accepted the truth, that died, and they're going to be resurrected when the steward of the vineyard is called in Matthew 20, verse 8. He's called and he says, Now call the laborers and give them their hire. the first one that are resurrected, those that died in the 11th hour, just one before you. And all of our loved ones, my mother and dad, died in the 11th hour. If they come forth, they'd be resurrected. But they had they lived at the time of the judgment of the living, but they died. Now they're going to be resurrected. But that judgment of the living started, whenever that sanctuary was restored in 1970, and Rhoda Johnson had all seven means complete to work with, and he taught the seventh seal had opened, and he taught the judgment of the living had begun, which is right. It begun. But there is a scripture in the Bible that talks about adding sin to sin, laying house end to end, and said all they did during that period of time was add sin to sin. They followed the sanctuary system, but they didn't know how to purify themselves and get their sins blotted out because they followed also the idolatrous practices of Babylon. They wouldn't give them up. That's how they added sin to sin. They couldn't get their sins blotted out, even though they followed the atonement year by year. They had a sanctuary system, an instrument to follow the divine ordained system of the true worship, to teach it, and to raise up the foundation of many generations. And Vertus Johnson did that and operated that sanctuary for 33 years. But he operated with the idea that you can still participate in the idolatrous practices of Babylon, and still, as long as you're following the feast days and believing in the ordained system of true worship, but not necessarily following the spirit of the law, but to the letter of the law, then that's what you call adding sin to sin. But Gilead Center is being judged year by year by year by year. Every atonement, either they had their sins blotted out or they didn't. And I dare say that only those that are signing a crown against the abominations in that church during those 33 years are the only ones that got their sins blotted out on the Day of Atonement. All right, let's go on. Those who die at that time are perhaps those who cannot stand the hardship while the judgments of the Elohim are falling upon the land in the time of the plagues. Well, those that of our loved ones that died during the 11th hour, if they were living today, they would. My dad would be 122 years old if he was living today, and he died at 103 in 1993. And that was 10 years before the 11th hour was over with. My mother died 3 years before that. 13 years before the 11th hour was over with. She died in the faith. But she's going to be resurrected here in the 12th hour. Alright? I believe she will be. Those who die at that time are perhaps those who cannot stand the hardship while the judgment of the Elohim has fallen upon the land in the time of the plague. Well, I was talking about the 12th hour here. This brings the close of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call. And we were going to close this service now with a song. Stand up for Yahshua. Stand up for Yahshua, ye soldiers of the cross. Lift high his royal banner, it must not suffer loss. From victory on to victory, his army shall he lead. Fell every foe his vanquished, and Yahshua is king indeed. Stand up for Yahshua, he shall obey. For to the mighty conflict in this his glorious day, ye better men now serve him against unnumbered foe. Let courage rise with danger and strength and strength oppose. Stand up for Yahshua, stand in his strength alone. The arm of flesh will fail you, you dare not trust your home. Put on the gospel armor, His peace put on with prayer. Where duty calls our danger, be never wanting there. And love, stand up for Yahshua, the strife will not be long. This day the noise of battle, the next, the victor's song. To him that overcometh, a crown of life shall be. He with the King of glory shall reign eternally.